We made this.
Welcome to the XCast. The truth is in here. I'm your host today, Kurt North, and today I've taped an X to my window, and he's been lurking in the car park ever since. It's none other than Mr. X himself, Mr. Stephen Williams. Hello, Mr. Williams. It's a pleasure to speak to you today on behalf of the XCast. We thank you for coming on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine, Kurt. Thank you for having me, and I'd like to thank all the fans out there right off the top for your years of watching the show and your years of dedication.
We've got a great fan group on our page on the XCast Basement that we use, and when we said that we were going to be recording this show, that blew up. So we're looking really forward to hearing what you've got to say over the next few moments. So it should be a good interview.
I hope so. Yeah, and just know this: this show is really about Stephen Williams. You know, the hell with the X-Files. This is going to be really about me, okay? Just want you to know that.
That's absolutely fine by me. I would like to say personally thank you, because my favourite element of the show is the myth arc. And without you being there, you were definitely for me an integral part, and it's an honour to speak to you regarding the show. But we should start at the beginning, I think. We're looking at the X-Files from the very beginning, to the early 90s. So season one was fairly successful. It finished on the Erlenmeyer flask, so Deep Throat obviously died, and season two, as they're bringing into production, they're looking for the next informant. Now, how did you land the role, and were you aware of the show, and what were the beginnings of your X-Files journey? How did you hear about it? Did you know about the show, and what was the journey going into the show before you filmed your first scene?
Okay, first of all, I had no clue what the X-Files was. I've got a very good friend of mine, Roy. He was a fan. And when I told him that I was going to audition for the show, he was much more excited than I was, because I had not seen the show yet. I was probably introduced to the producers and the powers that be to the show because I worked with Morgan and Wong from 21 Jump Street. Everyone knew me from 21 Jump Street. And a lot of the 21 Jump Street people went over to the X-Files. I think Glenn Morgan and Mr. Wong went over to 21 Jump Street, and they tapped me to do an audition. So I go in to do this audition. I have no clue. No one's told me anything. They just hand me a group of papers and say, read this. And I've got no clue how to do this role. He's called Mr. X in a show that I know nothing about. But any character called X has got to have some mystery to him. So I made the decision as an actor to go in and do this show and to do this audition as ambiguously as I could. And I think that this is how I performed X throughout the time that I was there. Say the words, have an air of mystery, and let the audience figure out who this guy is. Because no one ever really figured out whether X was a good guy or a bad guy, whose side he was on, who he was subordinate to, and who his subordinates were. No one knew. That was that's one of the contentions that disappointed me about this show, is that they ended this character so much sooner. You know, from an actor's point of view, of course, I'm out of a job now. But I thought the writers were so good, and the show was so interesting, and the character was so interesting. I was terribly disappointed when he had to take a bullet. Chris Carter himself called me, said, Stephen, we want to bring you up for another episode. That's the good news. Bad news is you got to take a bullet. And I went, wow, we're just getting started with this character. So there was so much left. There was so much richness left to this character that could have been explored. So from an artistic point of view, I was disappointed in his demise. But I had a fabulous time while doing him. One of the most interesting characters I've ever done. But that's how, you know, that's how it came about. It came about because the producers from 21 Jump Street knowing who I was and tapping me for this audition. And, of course, I nailed the role, which is my specialty, nailing roles.
There's nothing wrong with nailing roles. So you mentioned there about bringing the ambiguity, and I think that comes across really well. A lot of the major scenes, which we'll get into in a short while, a lot of people always refer back to them and say, you know, what was the meaning behind that? And the whole element of the show itself works to that degree because, you know, you do have ambiguous endings and you do have people working within the show that you have, the kind of, you don't know what their true motives are. So when you first read that first script when you went in and you decided to play it that way, was there a frame set in mind that you were going to play as straight as you did? I mean, you do have elements, especially in some scenes, where your dry humour really comes through. And was that something that you brought to the table, or was it just the fact that you just wanted to play that ambiguous role?
It was a little bit of both. It was something I brought to the table. Every actor brings his own stuff to the table based on what the writer has written and based on what the director is telling you to do. Initially, you know, one of the interesting things about this show was initially, X was supposed to always be shot in shadow. This is how it was set up with the DP, the cameraman, that you never saw anything but maybe half of his face, right? So you never really knew who this guy was. But they shot the first show, and when we saw the rushes from the show, you know, you could see me full blown, you know, so that shadowy thing photographically was out the window. Now he was there, but he was still a man of mystery. Having a good director and having someone with a clear vision of who a character is really, really helps an actor to develop that character. So it was a combination of me and my directors and just knowing. Once I got to that ambiguity thing, you know, I stuck with that because he's X. He's Mystery Man. We don't know who the hell he is. And that's how I tried to keep him. And to this day, I don't think the fans really know. I don't know. I tried to keep myself in the dark as much as possible about X also, which helped me. You know, like a lot of actors have a backstory and all that. I deliberately did not give myself a backstory because I wanted X to be as mysterious to me as he was to the audience. I thought being mysterious to me would help him be more mysterious to the audience.
Well, that's interesting you should say that, because one of my questions was going to be that specifically in One Breath, where you said that your character says, "I used to be you, I was where you are now," and I was going to see if you had anything in your mind that goes back to what X did in his backstory, but you just completely decided, no, I don't want to know, I want to keep the mystery. So
at that point, apparently what I thought was that I was as, I don't know if we can call him naive, but maybe for lack of a better word, as naive as Mulder. I was a company man. I was a guy who believed in the system and what was I was being told to do. And at some point, X became disillusioned with this system, with what was going on. And like you said, he used to be Mulder. He used to be that guy who believed and da-da-da-da-da. Now, I think he knows the truth. At least he knows that there's bullshit in the game.
Yeah.
You know, he knows at least that. And I think he has a line in that same episode that says, "I'm not going to end up, you got my predecessor killed. I'm not going to end up like that." Of course he did. But I think he'd made up his mind to protect himself, you know, just go along with the program and protect himself at all costs, which didn't work out.
Well, as a huge fan, you'll probably love this as a show to pitch that I've always wanted. And whenever this comes up on people who ask questions, we get a lot of polls asked them, "Would you like to see an X-Files spin-off?" And that's something that, you know, that I've always said is I would love to see a show called The Predecessor, where it's you and Deep Throat on adventures. And I think.
Oh man, wouldn't that be great? Yeah, we thought about stuff like that. I thought about stuff like that. I don't know if any producers ever thought about stuff like that, but of course I did. You know, there was that same, I know we were going to get to it down the line, but that same thing happened on Supernatural. We thought about a spinoff with Bobby and Rufus, you know, and I said to the producers once, you know, these fans have been watching these two hot guys do this show for seasons after season. Why the hell would they want to watch these two old guys do the same thing, you know? but me and Bobby, you know, Rufus and Bobby had a great fan base, and it might have worked. Who knows? Still two of the most popular characters on the show, and we absolutely adore it.
Yeah, and they are, and I think some people have got some questions about that a bit later on, so that's great. Yeah, and as I said, the thing with Deep Throat and Mr. X, of course, is that the screen time together was non-existent, so you know it would have been an interesting one. But that's just in my head canon, so we'll leave that there. Okay, so
it's funny because when they brought the Ruby, I can't pronounce the last name, they brought her on after me.
Oh yeah,
and we thought there would be a love interest happening with her and Mulder, but that never happened. I mean, you never know where these writers are going to come from, and I find it so fascinating that these writers come up with such brilliant ideas and such brilliant conceptions. They have an askew way of looking at, you know, life, the universe, nature, existence. Where do they get these ideas from? It's something I always said. I always thought, do they know something we don't?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we were just discussing. I was going to ask this question as well. Did you manage to catch any of the revival seasons at all?
Have you managed the revival
to,
season?
Yes, season 10 and season 11. Did you manage to get to see any of them at all? Or?
Yeah, well, I had the opportunity, but once I leave a show, I'm done with it.
Yeah.
Stephen Williams is not in it, so they're all with him.
It's not the Stephen Williams show, unfortunately. The reason why I asked that for is what you said, that these writers of likes of Chris Carter was mentioned on our podcast, that Chris Carter seems to have this thing, especially in those times and into the revival in some ways, where he can see 5 or 6 years down the line in front of what people are going to envision or things that are coming up. And I think writers like that really are amazing. And it was fantastic for yourself, obviously, to get involved in that, which brings me to my next question about, you mentioned about direction and that being in the dark and the shadows, and that didn't quite work. Overall, over your X-File period, you worked with both Rob Bowman and Bob Goodwin primarily.
Yes.
And I know that you had Kim Manners as well, as well in The Truth. And I think you worked with Kim Manners in Jump Street as well, didn't you?
Correct.
And Supernatural. So with those three, I think you had a couple more directors. I think Dave Nutter was maybe one of them. But when they were giving you input, and what input did you have with them? How did that all transpire? How did that work between yourselves? And were there any differences in the styles of the different directors that you worked under during the show?
No, really. I think directors they pay more attention to the style of the show. And if they are confident that an actor has his character down, they let you go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They give you that free rein to do your thing as an actor. There are certain things that you might do that they'll change. Because, you know, actor, we want to ad-lib a little bit. We want to put our own spin on stuff. And if it doesn't fall in line with the idea of the show. Here's the deal. For me, for any episode, everybody has got to be on the same page. We're all telling the same story. That's the first thing that happens to me. The writer, the producer, the director, the actors, we all must be telling the same story. We've all got to be on the same page. And I'm sure that there are some technical things, too, going in and out of commercial, words you want to end on, words you want to begin on when you come out of the break, and ideas that they are trying to get across about how these characters are interacting. So it's a collaborative effort. It's a giant collaborative. None of us work in a vacuum. You know, we see a lot of award ceremonies where the actors get all these accolades and directors get some accolades and da-da-da. And we forget that, you know, one of the people that I appreciate most, or the people that I appreciate most, is my crew. You know, my drivers, my production staff, my PAs, you know, all of these people. It is so integral for everybody to be on the same page and to be working together. So for the most part, they let me go. Once they saw that I had a handle on this character, they let me ride, you know, do the words. And I will sometimes ask, if I've got a writer anywhere within my periphery, especially like during the audition process, one of the questions I like to ask is, what did you have in mind when you wrote this? What were you thinking when you wrote this? I'm going to bring my spin to it, but what were you thinking when you wrote this? And what is it you want to see from this character? And that's my job as an actor, to give that writer and that director something that they envision when those cameras are rolling.
Well, that's brilliant. Just one question on the script then, just from what you've said there. I mentioned your dry humour when you're at the opera and you come out of the show and basically turn around and say, I've never slept better. Was that something that was in the script, or was that something that you ad-libbed?
That was in the script.
The line, both that and the fat lady is singing, are both fantastic lines, and you delivered it absolutely perfectly. And I just love those scenes because it's a side to X that you don't often see. And I really do appreciate that. I think it's fantastic.
I appreciate it when I get writing like that, when I get words like that, and you put your own, they could have been delivered 1,000 different ways, you know, but when you get lines like that, I really like it, because the one thing I love about any character, whether he be villain, bad guy, you know, good guy, is humor. Humor is something that's wonderful, and it's kept me alive for a long time, kept me a happy camper as a human being for a long time, is to see humor in just about everything, you know. If you look at comedians, man, comedians are funny, and most of that comedy, if you think about it, comes out of tragedy, you know. One of the biggest pieces of humor we've got is that old banana fall. You know, you slip on a banana peel. Everybody laughs. In the meantime, you got somebody on the sidewalk paralyzed. You know, so.
Yeah, it's all in the beholder's eye, isn't it, really?
I'm given an opportunity to deliver something that I think is humorous. I come up with a way to put it out there.
Well, it was expertly done. Okay, so going back to our Facebook group, they came on straight away and asked quite a lot of questions, and we would normally do this towards the end, but because of the way that they were asking the questions, a lot of them were asking about particular scenes. So I thought it might be just as well to include them in this part of the questions, just purely because it works out quite well, really. But Katie Doe asks, because it was one of my top six moments, I'd love to know if he has anything specific recalling the scene in the garage in One Breath. So we briefly talked about that before, about that scene. But do you have any specific memories of doing that scene?
In One Breath, the garage, is that where Mulder and I have the fight?
No, that's in Talitha Kumi. It's in One Breath, you're saying you got her killed. I'm not going to get killed myself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that scene. Now, what was the question about that scene? I've got a little story about that. But what was the question? You wanted to know what?
I would love to know if you have anything specific, recall anything specific about filming that scene.
Oh, yeah. First of all, it was a scene where I learned what a badass X was, you know, cold-hearted fucking killer, just a badass and strictly a straightforward businessman in a sense, you know, relative to his business. I thought it was one of the most wonderful, the thing I loved was the way they shot that scene, you know, his iciness, the coldness, you know, rescuing Mulder. Also, because X, people didn't know, again, whether he was a good guy or a bad guy, but he had two incidences in that show where he rescued Mulder, which I think endeared him a little bit more to the fans also. But I thought it was brilliant the way they shot it, the shadow thing, When you go back, you only see his, you see the guy's head on his knees, you see X's hand come up, the gun come up, and you hear the gunshot. I thought that was just brilliantly done. I loved it. It was so, you know, artistic. So that's the thing that stands out most to me about that scene, is the way that execution was done.
Okay, next question from Sarah Blair. Now, Sarah Blair, just as a proviso, just so you're aware, is a huge Skinner fan.
Mitch was my favorite guy, by the way. Everybody knows Mitch is my favorite guy on the show. I love Mitch.
Good, yeah, good. Well, that'll be music to her ears, because obviously you don't want to beat her baby up. But she basically says, and there's a couple of questions here which I'll put together in one question for you, but she basically says, you know, I'd love to have more details on that fight scene between X and Skinner.
Oh, okay. Here's the deal on the fight. We had two different directors. We had a director glitch in that show. So we had rehearsed the scene at the end of the day. We had kind of rehearsed the scene, what we were going to do in that elevator, what was going to happen with that confrontation. All right. So we end the day with, you know, an incomplete rehearsal. We figured we'll come back tomorrow. We'll finish it up. Well, we came back the next day, and we had a brand new director. Something had happened. I think our director had gotten sick or had an accident or something. So now we've got a brand new director doing this scene. And we kind of showed him what was worked out. And then Mitch and I decided, literally, Mitch and I did this scene. We decided, what would we do? These are two badasses, right?
Right.
We walk into the elevator. And Mitch says something. I said, you know, well, I forget who struck the first blow. I think it was me who struck the first blow. I go, well, you know, we're standing this close. And we both worked in, you know, we've both done action stuff before. So I said, we're standing this close. I would probably headbutt you. Mitch said, I would headbutt you back. You know, said, okay, then I'd probably strike you. And Mitch said, I'd strike you back, you know. So this is what we did. Bam, bam, bam. All of a sudden, I'm on the ground, and Mitch is on top, and then my gun comes up, you know. And then he goes back to it. And the way they shot this was so nice, because now the gun comes up. Now we cut back to Scully, I think. We cut back to Scully in the apartment when Mitch goes in. He's all disheveled, but he's gotten the information that he needed. So the big question was, from all my fans, who won that fight was the big question. Like, did Mitch kick X's ass? Did X decide to acquiesce and give him the information? And from my point of view, even though I was on the bottom, Mitch had a gun in his face, you know, with my hand on the trigger. So maybe I just decided, okay, I'll just give him this information and, you know, get Mulder out of the fix that he was in. So it's always been a little mystery as to who won that fight and how it went down. But Mitch and I put that together. We thought, let's make it quick. And if you saw the scene, you know, it's bam, 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 boom. You know, it's done. No great big huge fight thing going on in the elevator. Close quarters. Choreographer didn't want to be bothered with, you know, that sort of thing, trying to choreograph a fight scene in an elevator like that. But we, you know, we're two old guys, too. You know, we weren't spring chickens, you know, so it worked out. I think it worked out brilliantly. You know, people like that fight. And to this day, I don't think they know who won the fight.
No, and I'm sure if we had Mitch on the show that we'd ask him the same question and there would be a slightly different take on it, wouldn't there? So it would be certainly be an interesting one. And that was going to be the next question, actually. And I'll ask the question because it has got some resonance to it. You were saying about the choreography there. So was there actually an originally organized fight scene then with the first director? Was there already something in place, or was it a case of you just going, well, we're just going to go for it? Well, or was there actually some sort of fist fight going?
No, they had some stuff worked out, I do believe. We just never got it completely, put in place.
Right. Okay.
We ended the day. We had to end our day before. We got it done, so we said we'll come back tomorrow and finish it up. But again, we had the new director when we came back tomorrow, and Mitch and I just decided, let's just shorten this thing, you know?
Yeah, It is a wonderful scene, and it is often quoted as some of the best scenes in the show's entire run. So hats off to you, to both you and Mitch. I think you did an absolutely fantastic job with that. It is something that comes up time and time again, and I'm sure that Sarah will love the insight there. Well, also as well, the part of the choreography, we have mentioned it just as we were talking about the previous question, but your fight scene with Mulder in Talitha Kumi when you're in the car park basement, how was the choreography on that? Was there much on that, or again, was that something that you and David Duchovny did together?
That was something that was given to us, and we worked it out. In most fight scenes like that, you modify whatever the choreographer comes up with. You're going to modify it a little bit, too, because it all depends on what your physical abilities are. You know, sometimes actors are given stuff they just can't do or are uncomfortable doing, or it doesn't look right. So we tweak it. And this was one of those scenes where, you know, the choreographer and me and David worked it out. You know, it was always what always struck me was I just thought, in my own personal opinion, X was such a much tougher guy than Mulder was. So he shouldn't have had as big of a struggle as he had with Mulder. I don't really recall the fight scene, but I know we struggled a bit. I know, right. I could have kicked his ass in less time.
I would probably agree with that. You know, Mulder was pretty much not the he wasn't the action
the
hero until
he
later seasons.
But then that's sort of an I don't know the word, an accolade to his character. Also, you know, some of the softest looking characters can be some of the baddest asses too.
I mean, Mulder did use his intelligence a lot during the Hutt show's run, and that's where he came from. And obviously, his desire and his wanting to believe, and his whole analysis of life, really, rather than obviously coming out and being a badass like yourself. So that's good. We've got one more question regarding those couple of scenes, and then I'm going to move on to what I believe is one of your favourite scenes. Matt Latham says, in regards to fights, is there anyone you didn't get to fight that you wish you had?
No, not really. Maybe the alien hunter, Brian's character. Brian's character was, you know, a tough guy. I never had to run into him. If there was ever to be any conflict that might have been interesting, it might have been him and X. But I think X was, you know, he had just as much brain as he had physical prowess also. And again, being a man in the shadows, he tried to stay out of as many confrontations as he possibly could. You know, there's a skill to that. There's a survival skill to not having to. It's like martial artists. You know, if you're a damn good martial artist, you try to avoid a fight as opposed to getting into a fight. So I think that was part of X's thing, too. He would avoid as many confrontations as he possibly could, because the more he avoided, the more he was allowed to stay in the shadows. You know, once you become a badass and you're out there up front, everybody knows who the hell you are. And that's not something that X would have wanted.
Yeah, and he mentions that in Soft Light, in the episode Soft Light, where you're chasing the guy with the shadow. And one of the things that you said there about him also being intelligent, he was intelligent enough to stand back when that guy came out of the room. And to let him go, because obviously Chester Ray Banton was going to effectively kill him if he walked into his shadow.
Exactly. X was very aware. X was a survivor. He was a survivor, you know, up until that point.
Up until that point. And then on Soft Light as well, he actually mentions within it, and this is a lovely nuanced section, and this is why I like, and I really love the third season. I think the third season is so cohesive overall, and this is something that I mentioned in a podcast recently. That it's so cohesive. I mean, you've got Softlight, which is effectively a Monster of the Week story, but X is talking about that the fact he's been taken out of the shadows because he's now seen Skinner with that fight scene, and he's also saw Scully as well, because Scully was there as well. So the fact, and Mulder asks him that question, you know, X comes out and says, I've been exposed here. And that's one of his big fears, and you know, effectively because of what happened to his predecessor. So I think that was a really interesting and nice nuance in that episode, Soft Light. And I really like, as I mentioned there, the fact that X could, was intelligent enough to know when he couldn't win a particular battle, so he stood off from him and let him go. I'll win the battle another way.
The one thing I did love about that particular scene was that I got to interact with Scully, because most of the time X only interacted, and that was the intention. Of course, I'm sure it was X's intention to only interact with Mulder. He never really expected to see anybody else. I mean, you know, with the X in the window, and he saw Mulder when he wanted to. So it was, from an actor's point of view, it was nice to work with Zaina.
You get to offer quite a bit of information to Scully over the course of the time, even though you don't spend that much time with Gillian in that acting role. In the scenes that you are with her, they're actually quite really important scenes. I mean, the X pushes the smallpox eradication program to Scully and tells her to look at the chip in the back of her neck and things like that. So it's, some of the stuff that he actually does say to her is really important, and you get that feeling that there's something underlying there with the way that X is portrayed. That, you know, there is that element of he does want to do the right thing, but as you were saying before, there's that ambiguity of, does he want to save Mulder from the train or not? You know, is that just him protecting himself? So I think it's so well played and well nuanced.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was. It was because, again, it was about his agenda. Who is X's boss? And what is X's agenda? You know, we kind of knew what the smoking man's agenda was. We just never knew what X's agenda. And I think you're right. That was a part of that character, that was Mr. Good Guy, who wanted to do the right thing, even though he was involved in stuff that was possibly wrong. And he knew it was possibly wrong. But again, he's in it now and he needs to survive. You do what you have to do in order to survive as a human being. You know, so I think that was, X had a lot of conflict going on in his head too, I think.
Okay, so we move on to Wet Wired. Now, Wet Wired is an interesting one and something I'd like to get a bit more information on regarding, to see what your thoughts are on it. So in Wet Wired, you did have some scheduling conflicts at the time. I think you were filming LA Heat at the time.
Yeah, I think I was, at that time, during that era. Oh, I was awesome during that era. Kurt, I was doing three shows at once. I think I was starring in L.A. Heat for sure, and I was recurring in X-Files and I think something called Legacy. I'm not sure which the other show was, but I was doing three shows at once. I think I'm one of the only actors that have been doing that era. Me and Victoria Raul, I think, was doing Diagnosis Murder, some soap opera, and something else. We were only two actors in Hollywood doing three shows at once.
Right, okay.
So that was what was happening there. What was that question again?
It's fine. It was during the filming of Wet Wired. So Wet Wired was the episode where there's a key sequence right at the end, which we'll talk about in a second, but there was an emissary of sorts. So effectively, you could see what they did with the show. They had an emissary for yourself, and they were relaying the information to Mulder, and there was this story about it was all about the TV being affecting people and all that type of thing and brainwashing people, and the emissary was kind of going through what potentially your script would have been but slightly tweaked, and you were having to be X was having to be away from the event of what was happening, and he turns up right at the very end and kills the people in the house, because that was his role all along, that was his job all along, but you couldn't get close to it. So that was a nice little write around that they did for that. And then you get a great scene with David Duchovny together with yourself, where David Duchovny's really testing X on what his loyalties are and where he is and what is he giving Mulder. And then we get the car scene, which in many ways foreshadowed what was about to happen.
That ranks very high as one of my favorite scenes. I think that was the first and only time that William B. Davis and I, you know, Cigarette Smoking Man and X, interacted. And the mystery, again, the way it was shot, a lot of this art, you know, with me coming down the alley, the sort of foggy coming down the alley, getting in the car with him, Now we've got these two mystery guys. Because Cigarette Smoking Man was kind of a mystery, too. Even though he was there and he was spouting his agenda a lot, you didn't really know what role he played. Now you've got these two guys together. Who's whose boss? What was their relationship? That was a mystery, too. You know, was I his boss? Was he my boss? Were we on equal plane? We never knew that, I don't think. And then I blatantly lied to him, you know. And it was just, I just thought it was so well done. Because I think he's a fabulous actor, William B. His character was fabulous. And the two of them together created excitement for me as an actor. I was excited about this interaction and about this scene. And I walked away from that with as much mystery in my mind as I think the fans had also. You know, what just happened there? You know, it's kind of a what just happened there kind of thing for me, you know. But yeah, it was, again, one of my favorites to interact with him.
Absolutely. I mean, it comes towards the end of the third season, so it looks like it's foreshadowing what was to happen, unfortunately, in a few episodes' time. But it was really, what I really liked about it was the, I think there was a, I'm paraphrasing, but I think Smoking Man says to X something along the lines of, did you find out who the leak was? And you say, yeah, he was taken care of. And then he says, did you find who told him about the leak? Who was obviously X's character. And the way you look at him and stare at him and say that person's not known yet is absolutely fantastic.
It was incredible. I mean, I actually felt the moment. I never asked William B. about it, but I actually felt that moment myself. You know, if I had been a viewer, and when I saw it, I was a viewer. When I saw it, I went, "Ooh, I like that." That was cool. Yeah, worked for me. This is how I work, too. Actors have so many different ways of work. If I can relate to the words, that's all I need. You know, we talk about method actors and talk about preparation and da-da-da-da-da. I don't do any of that. I like to say I'm a natural. So as long as I can relate to the words within that story, I can normally come up with a decent performance.
Right. Okay. So you say that. So you're not one of these actors. If you're all method on set as X walking around, being sneaky around shadows.
Hey, but my friends and a lot of other actors, my friends tease me about how I can turn stuff on and off instantly. You know, I can be clowning and acting and laughing and da 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 da. And when the director says action, bam. There I am, in character. Yeah. So, yeah, and it is about relating to the words. It's not about having to be in character, so to speak. It's just about what am I supposed to say and who am I supposed to say it to and what are my intentions when I say it. That's a very important word to me in acting, is intention. If you have intention, it will show in your face and in your eyes. And if the cameraman is where he's supposed to be, you have an effective scene.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that in mind, is anything on set that you can recall that was, you know, any fun times or anything you can recollect while you're on set with the cast and crew that you can recall and give us some anecdotes on?
Well, no, I'm oh God, no. I live in the moment. You know, Kurt, I truly believe that Stephen Williams is a guy who lives in the moment. So it's hard to remember stuff because I'm in the moment. I just do things as they happen. And I had a ball. You know, one of the things I do remember about it, we had some of the best food. We had some of the best craft service on the planet. You know, in the middle of the night, you could get lobster soup and lobster and steak from Crafty, from craft service, not even from the catering, from craft service. So we were always well taken care of on that set. That stands out. Just watching a lot of the characters. This was one of the most interesting shows I've ever done. You know, like I said, Mitch and Krycek. you know, and cigarette smoking man, and Scully, you know, to watch these actors work was quite interesting to me also. It was a lot of fun to see that kind of professionalism and that kind of art come to life.
And that's why we love
it so much. I have a good time on the set, man. I don't go to work unless I can have fun. I'm not a serious person.
That's what I like to hear.
I'm a fun-loving, wild kind of, you know, I'm a baby boomer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I particularly want to have a good time because there's nothing like being on a miserable set. There's nothing like being on a set with a bunch of assholes or a asshole or, you know, somebody's going to make that work day uncomfortable or not pleasant. So I consider myself a fun guy on set.
You're great. Well, you know, it's a shame that I can't come over there and watch you for a day. That would be fantastic to see. Okay, so you mentioned Chris Carter about him informing you about, unfortunately, your death on the show. And what did you think of, just ignoring the fact that you would like to have gone on for a few more years, what did you think of his actual exit, of the way that the X went out?
I'll say that I thought they missed a lot of art. They missed a lot of storyline because we never really got to know X. X's story was never told. You know, who this guy? We still don't know who this guy was. Now, having said that, and I won't elaborate because water under the bridge, as they say, but there were rumors. There were rumors about X's demise and why X was gone. And the rumors centered around a certain character not wanting X around anymore. I don't know if any of them are true, but I think that X was pulled. I mean, it's a show called The X-Files, and I'm a character called X.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
My crew, let me just say that the crew on X-Files, three-quarters of that crew was a crew that I had worked with for 5 years already on 21 Jump Street. When I got that role on The X-Files, three-quarters of that crew went, "Oh, Steven, you got the role? Oh, come on, man. Can we get you this? Can we get you that? Da-da-da-da-da." So there were rumors that there was a little bit of jealousy going on with one of the characters on that show relative to my good treatment from the crew.
X-Files has had its conflicts over the years, which we've discussed on the podcast before. You know, obviously with likes of Chris Carter and David Duchovny having a bit of a conflict at one point, and Gillian and David not always getting together, not being happy together. So I can imagine.
That's the nature
of
the beast, baby. That's
exactly. Yeah, I mean, when you're also producing 24 episodes a year, you know, at that time, you know, late 90s is. I can imagine it being some feat. I mean, how long were you on set for, generally? I know yours was a slightly different role, but how long would you generally be on set for?
Oh, what do you mean, in the course of a day?
Yes, yeah.
We're pulling 12-hour, 13, 14-hour days, you know. That was normal back then. I always thought it was an absolute miracle that TV shows get made, man. If you could be on a set and watch the logistics, you know, the catering truck, the makeup trucks, the dressing rooms, all the coordination, location to location, getting the actors where they're supposed to be. I mean, it is a hodgepodge of activity. The coordination back in the dressing room, back in production office, all the paperwork. It's amazing how a television show or a movie gets made. To watch that every day, every moment to moment workings of it is absolutely amazing, you know. And it's that they get it done, and then they got to go into post production and put it all together. You know, all this stuff is really made in the editing room. You do all that work, and in the final analysis, it's that editor that brings it all together. So it's always been an amazing process to me just to watch. I've always wondered, how the hell does this get done? You know, the miracle of movie making.
Absolutely. Okay, so we briefly talked about your death. I mean, you did come back for The Truth, and you came back in season 5 for Unusual Suspects, in which your character actually names the lone gunman. What was it like when you came? Obviously, season 5 was you weren't that far removed from it at the time, But what was it like coming back to season 9 of The Truth when you were asked back to come and finish it off?
What, is that the one where I'm in the jail cell?
That's right, yes, yeah. You're the ghost ex.
Yeah, the ghost ex, yeah. That was oh, God, there's so many emotions with that. I was so happy to be back, number one, because I loved, you know, the character and loved the show. But it was also toward the end, and I didn't know that at the time. I could see it. But it was toward the end for Kim Manners.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I said, I'd worked with him already for 5 years on 21 Jump Street, and I loved that man. Absolutely adored him. So to see his health failing like that, it was great when I went back because I didn't know that his health was failing. So I was so excited to go back and work with him when he joined the show. And then to see him, you know, with the failing health, it turned out to be a joyous and sad occasion.
Yeah, so you know? Quite an ambivalent time.
Yeah, working with him for that last time was just wonderful for me because I always loved working with Kim. And again, being back on the show for that time was also wonderful for me. But, you know, it ended in that tragedy, you know, the sadness of life. Hey.
Yeah,
it
is.
The biggest cause of death is life. All right?
Exactly, exactly. And Kim gave us some absolutely marvellous episodes of both, not only just The X-Files, but as you say, Jump Street, and I think it was Supernatural, wasn't it, that he was on. So,
it was so wonderful. He was, yeah. And he was a joy to work with every day on set. I mean, he was so casual and good at what he did. He was very good at what he did, and he had such a casual and wonderful attitude about it. And so it was an absolute joy, the years I spent with him.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, so we're getting towards the end now. We've got the some feedback from our Facebook group. As I say, we've talked about some earlier on, but we'll look into some other questions. And this one's from Adam Silva, and it relates to X's death again. Not to go too much into that, because obviously it's a sore point.
Right.
But he would like to know, what would you have liked to have seen with X's character and story arc had he not been killed off? What would you have liked to have seen happen?
I don't know. I really don't know. I didn't have a vision. Again, I depended on the writers and their vision. My job is to interpret their words and the directors, director's actions. So I would have just liked, if there was anything, I would have liked to have known more about X. That's the thing, that we never got to know who he was, what he was, what his agenda was. I would have liked to have known what his agenda was. That's what I would have liked to have seen happen, is that the real man, you know, the insight into that real man, why he was doing what he was doing, how he got into doing what he was doing. I would have liked to have known all of that. That's the thing that bothered me about his demise. There was so much left untold, in other words. So much left untold about him. It was what was interesting to me that they wanted I've seen people die. I've seen people get shot in real life. Movie deaths, especially from gunshots, are nothing like the real deal. You know, people don't get blown away, blown back, you know, stumble, blah de blah de blah. You get hit right with a bullet and you drop like a sack of potatoes. Right in your tracks. It turns out the lights. You're gone. There's no more motor skills, no more anything. So they wanted a stuntman to do this death scene where I step out of the elevator, the guy shoots me, and they wanted a stuntman to do it. And I watched him do it, and I know, no, guys, I want to do this. I'd like to do this myself because it's too dramatic. It's too theatrical. You know, and if you'll notice that death when he shoots me, I drop like a sack of potatoes. And then I crawl, you know, crawl to the doorway and write the thing in blood. So that was one of the things that I really wanted to do, was to do my own death. And they let me, you know, do it, and it worked out fine as far as I'm concerned. But that was my input into this thing, you know. And I hated to leave the show, but the way he left, I thought that sort of bothered a few fans too. I mean, you took X out that easy. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, I did have a problem with that.
Yeah, so, but, hey, the assassin, you know, that was a nicely written part. I would have loved his role. You know, I loved the actor who played that role. He must have been, you know, he should have been happy because he's a badass, too. He's more stealthy than X was,
yeah.
You know? So we look at things as actors, we look at things from many different points of view. But that's one thing I did want to do it because I understood it and I wasn't angry about it. You know, there's some actors who will not participate. I mean, I've had shows where if you're going to kill me, I'm not going to participate in it. Kill me off camera.
Because
a lot of times, I mean, there was one particular show where I refused. I said, my fans don't want to see me die. You know, my fans don't want to see this character gone. I won't participate in it. Kill me off camera. Make some excuse up and kill me off camera. I won't do it. But this particular show, I didn't mind doing it. It didn't anger me. It just disappointed me. You know, but I wanted to do it right. I wanted to give him, you know, and it came off, you know, again, it came off X-y. You know, again, it kind of came off X-y. You know, you don't know. Well, like, what the hell just happened? You know, X gone? Wow, just like that? You know, so, yeah, it was interesting for me.
It's also interesting just in two separate scenes that both of them have involved that elevator where you've both you've put your own stamp on it. So you put your own stamp on the death scene and your own stamp on the Skinner and X scene as well, and both happened outside that elevator. So that's quite a nice touch. Okay, so we've got Veronica Turner now. She asks, I'm going to ask this slightly differently. What does Stephen Williams see as Mr. X's morality in the X-Files universe? Or rather, is Mr. X good, bad, or a mixture of both, or an anti-hero? So what does Stephen Williams, the person, see Mr. X as?
I think, you know, given those choices, I think anti-hero would be the word I might use. He believes in what he's doing. Even though some of it may be sketchy, but he believes in it. And again, he's a survivor. He's gotten himself caught up in something that he doesn't quite know how to get out of. So his only choice is to just survive, just ride it out, survive it. And he had a couple of decisions to make, like when he saves Mulder on the train. That was always a mystery to me. Do I save the alien, if there was an alien there, or do I save Mulder? Which one do I take? And he chose Mulder. That said something about what his agenda was, is that he knew that Mulder needed to be alive. So that gives you the impression maybe that he is in cahoots with everybody else who wants to keep Mulder alive. You know, cigarette-smoking man and that whole cartel. Who says, let's leave Mulder alone. You know, we need him to be alive for whatever reason. So I think that X was conflicted in a lot of ways. He was conflicted, but he made his choice. He made his choice and we move on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the scene in 731 where you are taking Mulder away from the train car before it explodes, as you mentioned before, is a fan favorite because, you know, it does give us something to fight for X, really, in that scene, because he has saved Mulder's life, so that was really good.
Yeah, it endeared him a little bit, I think, you know, to the fans and stuff. Now you really don't know. He's already, you know, had a big fight with Mulder. He'd kill him just as in a heartbeat. You know, he has a gun in his face in the base in the garage. You know that X will kill him in a heartbeat, but now we've got X saving him. So, again, that confusion, that mystery, that keeping the fans on their toes, keeping the viewers on their toes. You know, and also it keeps the actors on their toes in a sense.
Yeah. So one of the questions that Michael Little asks is, how was the working relationship with David Duchovny? Because obviously in the early stages, David Duchovny was the main character who you were working with in Mulder. So how was your working relationship with David Duchovny? How did that camaraderie come about? And is there anything from that point of view that you really enjoyed?
It was very professional.
Okay.
Let's put it that way. It was very professional. quite frankly, from a Stephen Williams point of view, there was not as much warmth as I would have wanted. David is a very professional guy, and he's a very stoic kind of individual. With my experience with him, was very stoic and very professional. It was sanitary. It was sanitary. Like I said, the man is a professional, and that's how it went. We never became buddy-buddy. And that's something that disappointed me a little bit because, again, I'm a gregarious kind of guy on set and with my fellow workers. And he wasn't quite as open to, you know, my gregariousness as I would have wanted. You know, that's just a personal, you know, personality thing, a chemistry thing. You know, we had chemistry as actors and pretty neutral as human beings.
Exactly. Okay, so moving off the X-Files now, we've got two more questions to go, and then we will discuss something slightly different. But Matt Latham asks, please ask him about The Leftovers, what it was like, if he enjoyed it, or even if he has his own interpretation to the other side.
Okay, that was quite a wonderful, interesting experience. First of all, I worked with Mimi Leader. Mimi had directed me in her first directing job on, I think it was L.A. Law, one of the Bosco shows, one of the L.A. Law, or I'm almost sure it was L.A. Law that she directed me in.
Right.
In her directorial debut. So to come back and work with her in The Leftovers, she was my very first director, and she was one of the executive producers, was a wonderful, nostalgic kind of experience. Now, what happened in this show was really funny to me, right? I've got in my very first episode, I think I've got two words, one line is two words where the kid comes to the door. I answer the door and we say something about, he said, do you want to pray with me? And I say, come on in. And it was, like I said, two or three words. Mimi had me do that scene about, we did about 12 or 15 takes
right
on this one scene. And she kept giving me adjustments at the end of each scene. Okay, Stephen, just bring it down a little bit. You know, just bring it down. And I'm thinking to myself, fuck, if I bring this down anymore, all you got to do is throw some dirt over me. I mean, it's, you know, I'm dead. You know, it was like so. And I'm thinking to myself also, Kurt, I'm thinking, oh, my God, I got to do this again. I haven't done it right yet. I was thinking, I'm going to lose this job on my first day of work with only two words. And so I'm thinking, am I this bad? You know? I mean, I was actually worried about my employment at that time because we kept doing so many takes. But what I found out later, because of the dramatic way that you know, this character ended itself, convinced my man to poison himself and then blew his own brains out. What Mimi was doing was trying to make me so innocuous. Is that the word? I mean, she did not want the viewers to suspect anything.
Yeah.
About this old guy. I mean, he was just an old guy that was there. She was trying to get me to the point where you didn't suspect what was coming.
Yes, really, now, really working you.
Right, to keep me just as low-key as I could. Don't give it away. Because actors, I know, and I will, if actors know that something is coming, they tend to give it away. They tend to give it away in their performance. You know, you tend to telegraph that something is coming.
Yeah.
What she wanted was no telegraphing, and she got it. She got me to a point where people didn't suspect what I was going to do toward the end. So it worked out. It worked out really, really well. I really appreciated her as a director for that, for knowing that, you know, and for sort of letting me know what was going on. And I found out things about the character, too. I mean, I think about the third episode, I found out I was a child molester. You know, because you don't get these scripts beforehand. You get the script and you find out, damn, he's a pedophile. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was a surprise to me. You know? But it was also cool that I didn't know that beforehand Otherwise, I probably would have given that away somehow as an actor. Again, when you have this information, this is why a lot of times it's not good to have a whole bunch of information about your character. That way you can live in the moment.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Without a doubt. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a wonderful answer. I'm sure Matt will be really chuffed with that. Okay, so two final questions, one from Amy Walker and one from Helen Balls, both on Supernatural. So I think you briefly talked about this and how much you enjoy working with him, but we'll ask the question anyway. So ask him what it was like filming with Mitch again in Supernatural, especially as they both ended up being killed off.
Oh, that was, again, that was just from a fan point of view, I thought, oh, fans are going to love this. You know, two guys from the X-Files, and now they show up in Supernatural. So I looked at it from, you know, again, it was just a joy to work with Mitch no matter what. But I looked at it almost from a fan's point of view, from the bird's eye view of a fan. It's like, wow, there's Stephen Williams and Mitch Flegge, you know, on Supernatural, two guys who had been on the X-Files together. So I thought that was just, it was just fun. It was kind of campy. It was actually kind of campy in my mind and just a lot of fun. And any time I got to work with that man was just an absolute joy. I mean, Mitch is my hero. Because he's always in, you should see this guy in real life, man. He's just in such great shape. You know, I'm a little bit older than he is, but he's always been in such great shape. He keeps himself in great shape, you know. And he looks terrific all the time, and he's got this pleasantness about him, and he's just a wonderful human being, you know?
Yeah, everything we've seen of him over the years, and he's got his own little fan club, the Pledgies, who follow him around all over the place, you know, and things you see on there. He's a fantastic person, and, you know,
he's cool. Yeah. He's the guy that's going to keep me from, he's going to get me to stop smoking sooner or later. Because every time I see him, he looks so great. I go, Mitch, you look good. He said, you still smoking, Steven? Yeah, man, I'm sorry. You know, so, it's that concern, that wonderfulness, yeah. But I thought, you know, the fans are going to love this when they see, you know, these two guys in the same, you know, doing two different roles in the same project again.
Okay, and finally, Supernatural, this is from Helen Balls. Is there any chance of seeing him again in Supernatural, seeing how Jim Beaver's returned as an alternate version of Bobby? From the apocalypse world, is there any chance that Rufus could be back?
I think that there's always, absolutely, a chance. I mean, you gotta say there's a chance. Everybody gets to come back. People have been to hell and back. Okay?
Yeah.
I didn't come back, so there's certainly a chance. And you know, I had it all worked out, actually. You know, when he tells Bobby that he has a heart monitor or something in his chest? You know, and he's missing three toes. But I'm thinking, here's what I worked out as a writer slash director, that somehow when Jim stabs him, when Bobby stabs Rufus,
right,
the blade struck the metal somehow.
Right,
and
okay.
Rufus is not really dead.
Okay.
Or Rufus is some suspended animation thingy. Is that his little heart thing is what saved him, kind of. That was like in my mind. And who knows? Who knows where he's been? Like the rest of the guys, he could be in purgatory. He could be hanging out, you know. God knows where. You know, his bones, they didn't burn his bones. They just buried him. They didn't burn his bones. You know, I found out he was Jewish, too. I didn't know Rufus was Jewish. I didn't. Yeah, but I'm saying these lines like I got to sit Sheba and something else I say. And I tell him about when we're doing the backhoe thing in his backyard, burying the body. I mentioned that I'm, you know, can't work on a certain day. And I'm going, what the hell is that about? And then I found out, well, you're Jewish, Stephen. Right, I said, you're Jewish. I went, oh
am I?
Right.
I think that hasn't Rufus came back a couple of times afterwards anyway, in flashbacks and things as well, hasn't he? So you'll be open to coming back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, you know. And if he comes back to life, I can see the episode now. He's going to be pissed. This would be a great episode because they were supposed to be two grumpy old men in the first place, you know, with this friendly adversarial kind of thing. I mean, I was his mentor. We worked together. We were partners. And you know how that goes. But I can see Rufus being pissed as hell at Bobby when he comes back. I mean, a writer could have a field day with that. You know, he goes, you son of a bitch, you stabbed me. You know what I'm saying? Go from there. You know, so I think that episode would be a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, we'll look forward to that if that ever does transpire.
If it ever does. I think it's toward the end of the show. Most shows like that, when they go into their final season, if they've had characters that were important or popular, they try to bring them back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I got my fingers crossed that if nothing else during that final season, we will see Rufus again.
Okay, well, that will be a great thing to see, and I'm sure that a lot of people on the X-Cast who also watch Supernatural will be really looking forward to that if that does happen. In the meantime, I just want to say absolutely thank you very much for coming on and discussing all things X-Files with us. You've been absolutely fantastic. I really enjoyed our time. Is there anything coming up in the future, any future projects that you have currently in the midst, ready to come out soon, or are you working on?
I think I mentioned it earlier. I don't know if we were recording that, but the True Detective, I have a nice little turn in True Detective in its third season coming up. And I've got a nice turn in Yellowstone also that I'm just finishing. I haven't quite got one more scene to do to finish up my Yellowstone turn. And hopefully there's a new show called Ambition that I'm going to be meeting with producers for tomorrow, as a matter of fact, and we'll see what happens with that. But there are two things in the can already. I'm asking my fans to be on the lookout for True Detective in Yellowstone. I get to play a cowboy in Yellowstone. Kind of fun.
Oh, cool.
And cross your fingers for me in this new project. And again, I'd like to thank all the fans for all their years of dedication and watching me and Bobby and you know, all the stuff back. Watching me as Mr. X. And please keep watching Stephen Williams. I'm just getting started. So thank you to all the fans, and especially the folks who come to these conventions. These conventions are incredible. I'm sure a lot of people have met me at conventions, and I just like to say to them, you're an incredible group of people.
Yeah, they are.
It's just amazing to go to one of these conventions and to see how much they like you and like your work and how they are. I mean, they're just incredible people. That's the best way I can put it. And so thank you, fans, very much.
Well, Mr. Stephen Williams, thank you so much from me and all people at the X-Cast. We wish you well in your future endeavors. For us at the X-Cast, we have been here with Mr. Stephen Williams, and as always, trust no one.
The truth is out there.
The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support The X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/TheXcast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/TheXcast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at IamWillAye.
Deny everything.